Counter next Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
We've now sanctioned Russian banks that together hold around.
This is VOA News. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton. U.S. President Joe Biden imposed additional sanctions Thursday and said he will impose severe costs on the Russian economy following Russian President Vladimir Putin's sweeping invasion of Ukraine.
We've now sanctioned Russian banks that together hold around $1 trillion in assets. We've cut off Russia's largest bank, a bank that holds more than one-third of Russia's banking assets by itself. Cut it off from the U.S. financial system. And today, we're also blocking four more major banks. That means every asset they have in America will be frozen.
The new sanctions target Russian banks, also oligarchs and high-tech sectors. He said over time, the sanctions would squeeze Russian assets and impair its economic growth. Biden stopped short of sanctioning Putin's personal assets, but said that remains a possibility if warfare escalates further. Putin launched the invasion early Thursday in the biggest European onslaught since the end of World War II, attacking Ukrainian forces in the disputed eastern region and launching missiles on several key cities, including the capital, Kiev. While U.S. lawmakers have come together to condemn Russian President Putin's invasion of Ukraine, their response to the Biden administration's latest sanctions remain divided along party lines. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi praised U.S. President Joe Biden's Thursday remarks, but Senate Minority Leader Mitch McConnell said Biden was too late in announcing that the United States would limit exports to Russia and sanction more Russian elites. From Washington, you're listening to VOA News. The UN Security Council will vote Friday on a resolution that would condemn Russia's military aggression against Ukraine in the strongest terms. It would also demand an immediate halt to Russia's invasion and the withdrawal of all Russian troops. A senior U.S. official says the Biden administration knows the measure will be vetoed by Russia, but believes it is very important to put the resolution to a vote to underscore Russia's international isolation. The official says the council vote will be followed by a resolution voted on quickly in the 193-member UN General Assembly, where there are no vetoes. The final draft resolution obtained Thursday by AP would reaffirm the council's commitment, quote, to the sovereignty, independence, unity, and territorial integrity of Ukraine within its internationally recognized borders. And the White House is expressing outrage at what it called credible reports from Ukrainian officials that the staff at the shuttered Chernobyl nuclear plant in Ukraine had been taken hostage by Russian troops. Press Secretary Jen Psaki said Thursday that, quote, we condemn it and we request their release. Psaki says the U.S. has no assessment on the state of the plant where radioactivity is still leaking decades after the worst nuclear disaster in history. But she says hostage taking could hamper efforts to maintain the nuclear facility. And she said that's incredibly alarming and greatly concerning. The British government has decided to expand a program allowing some Hong Kong residents to settle in the UK, providing a potential lifeboat for thousands of young people seeking to escape increasingly repressive Chinese rule in the former British colony. The British Nationals Overseas, or BNO, scheme that gives millions of Hong Kong residents the chance of British citizenship was launched 13 months ago. The move came after the Chinese government imposed a national security law on Hong Kong, which critics say has restricted the city's freedoms. Previously, only Hong Kong residents born before 1997, when the city was handed back to China from Britain, were eligible to apply for citizenship through the scheme. But following a parliamentary meeting Thursday, British Immigration Minister Kevin Foster outlined in a written statement the changes, which are expected to go into effect in October. Successful applicants can work and study in Britain for up to 5 years, after which they can apply for citizenship. Jailed Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny said Thursday he is against Moscow's invasion of Ukraine. He made the comment as he stood trial from prison after President Putin launched the attack. Via remote, I'm Marissa Melton, VOA News.
Today is Friday, February 25th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afua in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, President Joe Biden announces more sanctions on Russia as the European Union tightens its economic grip on key Moscow assets.
These new sanctions are more and bigger. So this is the third tranche of sanctions that the Biden administration has introduced against Russia, and that's the third in 3 days.
Clashes continue in Ethiopia's Afar region as civilians form self-defense militias to respond to attacks.
The hospital was forced to turn its library into a room for injured patients after an increase in fighting quickly put a strain on their capacity.
And China condemns Australia's plan to boost its scientific and strategic presence in Antarctica. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. President Joe Biden has announced a new round of sanctions targeting Russia after its invasion of Ukraine, charging that Russia's Vladimir Putin, quote, chose this war, unquote, and his country will bear the consequences. The sanctions target Russian banks, oligarchs, and high-tech sectors. This as European Union leaders agrees to impose sanctions that will, quote, have massive and severe consequences, unquote. During an emergency summit Thursday to condemn the invasion of Ukraine, the 27 member country leaders approved punitive measures against Russia's financial, energy and transport sectors, and restrictions on exports and financing. They also added more Russian individuals to its earlier sanctions list. The EU leaders said they also want to draw up sanctions against Belarus because of its close links to Russia. For more on President Biden's plans, I spoke with VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell.
These new sanctions are more and bigger. So this is the third tranche of sanctions that the Biden administration has introduced against Russia. And that's the third in 3 days, by the way. So these are coming on pretty fast and pretty thick. He's added four more banks. He has made it very difficult for the Russian government to now trade on global markets, to work with sovereign debt, to get access to currency. One thing he has not done, which is notable, is the U.S. so far has not cut off Russia from the SWIFT banking system. That is the international banking system that allows you to send money between bank accounts or even between bank accounts in different countries. And so far, he has not pulled that trigger. The other points that President Biden made that I just want to stress is that he repeated again that under no circumstances does he see U.S. troops inside Ukraine fighting. He made it clear that he has moved some more troops to Baltic states. Those are the countries of Latvia, Lithuania, and Estonia, but that he does not have an intention of putting American boots on the ground in Ukraine.
And with reactions coming fast and thick, what is the mood in the White House? What is the mood of the president as Russia continues to pour troops into Ukraine?
President Biden did not mince words. He was scathing in his criticism of President Putin and his actions, which he said were a flagrant violation of international law, which he condemned pretty unequivocally. There is a sense of tension, of course, in the White House, because these are very concerning events. Hundreds of thousands of Ukrainian citizens, probably more, there are 40 million people in Ukraine. So 40 million Ukrainians right now are afraid, they're concerned, they're upset as Russian troops cross the border. And President Biden is, of course, concerned as well, but he's also very firm. And I think he would probably say that he is resolute. And critically, he would say that NATO allies are also resolute, and they're all on the same page in imposing swift and severe consequences.
Talking about NATO allies, what of the neighbors of Ukraine? There has to be some worry because they've been asking for support in bolstering their defenses. How is that working with the White House?
I think it was on Wednesday that President Biden announced that 800 troops, infantry troops, would be going to the Baltic states and that some air support groups would be going also to those areas. So President Biden is trying to telegraph that he is there for them and that I believe his exact words were, we will defend every inch of NATO territory. And this is key because Ukraine itself is not part of NATO. And this is kind of the kernel of the whole controversy of the whole problem that Vladimir Putin has with Ukraine, that they would like to be part of the security alliance, that it was built around countering Soviet aggression.
That's VOA's White House correspondent Anita Powell speaking with me from Washington. Russia's invasion of Ukraine has so far been met with diplomatic silence in Africa, except for a comment made by Kenya's ambassador to the UN earlier this week. Analysts say that while many African countries disagree with Moscow's use of force, the continent's government are aware of Russia's power on the world stage. Mohamed Yusuf reports from VOA's Africa News Bureau in Nairobi.
Ukraine's ambassador to Kenya, Andy Previn, spoke to reporters in Nairobi and appealed to the international community to help his country against Russia's invasion.
Today, the future of Europe and future of the world is at stake. Today, Ukraine calls on the international community to take following actions, to implement devastating sanctions on Russia now, without any delay.
But so far, African government have said nothing about the Russian aggression. One exception is Kenya, whose ambassador to the UN, Martin Kimani, condemned the prospect of an invasion Monday, 3 days before Russian forces entered Ukraine.
Kenya rejects such a yearning from being pursued by force. We must complete our recovery from the embers of dead empires in a way that does not plunge us back into new forms of domination and oppression.
Separately, South Africa issued a statement Wednesday urging Ukraine and Russia to find a way to de-escalate tensions. Stephen Graz is the head of the Russia-Africa program at the South African Institute of International Affairs. He says African states are well aware of Russia's power in the international system.
African countries are also mindful of the place that the role that Russia plays in international politics. It's a supporter without asking about governance questions, without asking about the internal affairs of countries. There was a big Russia-Africa summit in 2019 in Sochi, where 43 African leaders went. Russia is definitely wooing the continent, and that may weigh on how critical countries are going to be.
But Grad says, in principle, African government opposed the idea of rearranging borders by force.
We were left with colonial borders at the end of the 19th century. And when our countries became independent, we decided that we would respect those borders, even though they cut off ethnic groups and language groups and so on and so forth. Otherwise, it's a recipe for total disaster. So I think the fact that there is some political affinity between Russia and African countries would probably make the statements more muted. But I think also African countries will stand up for their principles, and one of those is territorial integrity and sovereignty.
Kenyan international relations expert Kizito Sabala says he doubts the Kenyan ambassador's words at the UN will affect Nairobi's relation with Moscow.
Russia probably is going to ignore this statement, just like any other from the US or any other partner, and they are just going to proceed on what they want to do and what they think that is right. But I think in terms of relations, I don't think it's going to affect adversely Kenya-Russia relations.
Russia has exerted increasing influence in Burkina Faso, the Central African Republic, Mali and Libya in recent years. Some governments have used Russian mercenaries to battle insurgent groups. The mercenaries are accused of widespread abuses against civilians. The Russian government denies any link to the mercenaries. Mohamed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
As Russian troops push deeper into Ukraine amid worldwide condemnation of the invasion, Pakistan's Prime Minister Imran Khan met with President Vladimir Putin in Moscow on Thursday in what officials described as bilateral economic meeting. Islamabad says it wants more Moscow firms to invest in the country's energy sector and infrastructure, but criticism has continued to trail the visit. For more, I spoke with VOA's Ayaz Gar.
The highlight of his visit was this meeting with President Putin in Moscow on Thursday. And that was basically quite an unusual meeting in terms of the duration, because what officials told us was that it lasted 3 hours and that they had comprehensive discussions, not only on how to advance bilateral relations between the two countries, but also the Ukraine crisis was also discussed between the two leaders.
Talking about the Ukraine crisis, are Pakistani officials worried about the optics, about the messaging of this meeting happening at this time when majority of nations are criticizing the Russian president for invading Ukraine?
From the outset of this visit, the prime minister was under pressure. Imran Khan was under pressure at home from certain critics. And also there were criticism from outside Pakistan that this is an ill-timed visit. visit that, you know, the whole world is condemning President Putin, and here Prime Minister Imran Khan is going to sort of legitimize his aggression against Ukraine. But that is the kind of criticism that was prevailing even while he landed in Moscow on Wednesday. Officials who were part of his delegation, and in fact, Imran Khan himself, dismissed the suggestions that he was going to Moscow basically to provide some kind of support to Putin, because he said, Imran Khan, in an interview with the Russian media, that this was a bilateral visit that was planned long ago at the invitation of President Putin, and it had nothing to do with the crisis in Ukraine, and the only purpose of his trip was to strengthen bilateral relations. I mean, this is what he said. He also repeated that his country doesn't want to become part of any global bloc politics, like siding with one big power or the other. And the primary objective was to improve trading relations with Moscow so that his efforts can be augmented, which are aimed at lifting Pakistanis out of poverty.
Has Pakistan taken an official position on the Russian-Ukraine crisis and now the Russian invasion of Ukraine?
Today, at the end of the meeting with Putin, Prime Minister Imran Khan's office issued a comprehensive statement. And in that statement, he was quoted as telling President Putin that Pakistan regretted this Russia-Ukraine crisis, and he stressed the need for the parties to the conflict to use diplomacy and dialogue to solve this crisis, because Imran Khan, as he has been saying in the past, once again reiterated in this statement that any such conflict ultimately impacts developing countries like Pakistan, because obviously it has already led to the increase in oil prices, and Pakistan is one of the major importers of Russian and Ukrainian wheat. So obviously he sounded worried if you look at the statement, and he tried to urge President Putin to seek some kind of a diplomatic resolution. But you know, Pakistan obviously is trying to restore its relationship with Russia, because both the countries were bitter rivals during the Cold War, because Islamabad was always on the side of the United States. Now that Pakistan is having troubled relationship with Washington, it is apparently trying to revive or restore relations with Moscow.
That's VOA's Ayaz Gaur speaking with me from Islamabad. Fighting has largely died down in Ethiopia's Tigray region after more than a year of conflict between the federal government and Tigrayan rebels. However, clashes continue in the neighboring Afar region, where civilians have formed self-defense militias to respond to Tigrayan rebel attacks. In the town of Abdera, the main hospital is overwhelmed with injured. Vinicius Assis reports.
Aisha Noor was making breakfast for her husband and 8 children earlier this month when their home in Abala, a town in the Afar region, was hit by incoming fire. The explosives injured 10-year-old Noor Darsa's leg and burned the face of 9-year-old Tahir Darsa, who were sitting on the same bed as their mother in a small room full of others who were injured. Noor was able to get the wounded children to Samira's Dubti Hospital, but the family was separated. She said they are here to save their lives, but the situation for their family is dangerous. They don't know if the family members are alive or not. The hospital was forced to turn its library into a room for injured patients after an increase in fighting quickly put a strain on their capacity, as Dr. Hussein Aden explained.
We had patients who had penetrating abdominal injury, and some patients who had a brain injury, a traumatic brain injury because of the bullet, whether it's bullet or whether it's an explosion. And also we've seen kids who sustained burn traumas and who had also amputations, both leg and arm amputations because of the explosion.
72-year-old Fatuma Ibrahim has fractures in both arms and a leg.
They were fleeing the scene while they were fleeing the accident, the war. There was a car accident, so around 6 people died, and those who were fortunate enough to survive, they brought them to the hospital.
But with patients, even in the hospital corridors, it's clear that conditions in the medical facility are poor, with shortage of beds, medical supplies, and water, often forcing them to push back needed surgery. This is the main hospital in this region. There are 150 beds here, but the medical facility currently has around 250 patients.
Almost half of them arrived in the previous days. Fighting in the Afar region intensified in January, with Tigrayan rebels launching attacks against this part of the country full of mineral resources. Civilians here complain about lack of government support now that the TPLF has brought the war to some towns in their region. Vinicius Assis for VOA News, Smera, Ethiopia.
In other news, Sudan released 115 of 135 anti-coup protesters who had been held for weeks on Thursday following pressure from lawyers, family and international community. The detainees are part of a protest movement against the coup last October that has persisted despite security crackdowns killing 82 people and wounding more than 2,000, according to medics. Their detention followed the reinstatement of powers to the country's powerful intelligence services in late December, which has been a key tool under President Omar al-Bashir. Adama Deng, High Commissioner for Human Rights, called for the immediate release of all other protesters. Those still imprisoned include top former officials under the civilian-military power-sharing arrangement prior to the coup, held on corruption charges, as well as protesters accused of killing a police brigadier general. For more on this story and other breaking news, visit our website at voanews.com. Remember to connect with us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Search for VOA Africa. You are listening to VOA's International Edition. I am Chinedu Afo in Washington. China has condemned Australia's plan to boost its scientific and strategic presence in Antarctica. The government in Canberra on Tuesday announced plans to fly a fleet of surveillance drones and long-range helicopters over the icy continent. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Australia's $570 million Antarctic plan has environmental and strategic ambitions. It aims to chart unexplored parts of the continent's interior with drones and long-range helicopters, to boost research into glaciers, marine science and rising sea levels. Australia also has concerns about China's expansion in the increasingly contested region. At a media conference on Tuesday, Prime Minister Scott Morrison didn't mention specific countries by name, but he said some were eager to exploit its resources.
We are stewards of some of the most important and most sensitive environments anywhere in the world. We need to keep eyes in Antarctica because there are others who have different objectives to us.
Australia lays claim to more than 42% of the continent, a territorial ambition that's recognised by few other nations. The Australian government wants to uphold the 1961 Antarctic Treaty, which bans military and mining activity. About 30 countries maintain dozens of research bases on the world's coldest, driest and windiest continent. Professor Donald Rothwell is from the Australian National University's College of Law. He says some countries have ambitions to use the continent for defence purposes.
Antarctica was demilitarised under the provisions of the Antarctic Treaty and also denuclearised. Antarctica is a nuclear-free zone, but that doesn't mean to say that issues have not been raised from time to time about dual-use capacity and also dual-use technology.
China's state media outlet Global Times said Beijing had always abided by the provisions of the Antarctic Treaty system in carrying out scientific expeditions in the Antarctic region. It claimed Australia's multi-million dollar plan was part of the Morrison government's anti-China agenda and was driven by their hostility toward China. Relations between Australia and China, its biggest trading partner, have soured in recent years. There have been various diplomatic flashpoints, including allegations of Chinese interference in Australia's domestic affairs. The China state-owned Global Times said Canberra was driving the bilateral relations toward a dead end. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Istanbul's opposition mayor Ekrem Imamoglu is turning to a historic tradition to alleviate soaring poverty and a hurting economy that has seen inflation rates surge past 50%. His efforts have won international recognition and enhanced the mayor's reputation as a possible challenger to sitting President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
For decades, Istanbul baker Yavuz Erolder has been serving Turkey's main city, where, like in many other places, bread is a traditional staple of the poor. But not anymore. With prices jumping more than 50% as inflation soars, such hard times, Erolder says, sees people increasingly turning to the centuries-old charity tradition called On the Hook. He says, a customer pays for three extra breads, and I write here three on the hook, and people in need see there's free bread available. People's purchasing power recently really went down. Unfortunately, even those on a monthly salary started to come and ask if there was any bread left on the hook. Last year's collapse of the Turkish lira triggered a spike of inflation, officially running at 50%. But some independent studies put it at double that. Anger over rising prices is spilling onto the streets, with anti-poverty groups warning this winter that people are facing the stark choice of eating or heating. The opposition-controlled Istanbul municipality has brought the on-the-hook tradition into the digital world to alleviate surging poverty. People who can't afford their utility bills can post them on a municipality webpage, where another person pays for them through the site. Şengül Altan Aslan is deputy secretary of the Istanbul municipality. She says the need for providing help is needed more than any other time. When you look at the numbers, you see in November, 18,000 people left their bills on the hook to be paid, whereas in December, it was up to 25,000 bills. On February the 1st, only on one day, 10,000 people put their bills on the hook. The dire situation we're in asks for more solidarity. According to the municipality, those applying for help must be verified as being in need. So far, more than 300,000 bills have been paid through the scheme. Efforts by Istanbul's mayor, Ekrem İmamoğlu, are playing well in opinion polls, ranking him a potential front-runner in next year's presidential elections. The mayor has turned his municipality into the country's biggest bread producer, turning out more than 1 million subsidized loaves a day. Queues for subsidized bread have become a symbol of Turkey's economic pain. They've also enhanced the mayor's reputation among many. This resident of Istanbul, who preferred not to give his name, has high praise for the mayor. He says, "This is great work. The public should wake up. Such a service doesn't exist anywhere else in Turkey except in this municipality." A previous economic crisis brought an Istanbul mayor, current President Recep Tayyip Erdogan, to power. İmamoğlu's supporters hope that in this case, history will repeat itself. Dorian Jones, VOA News, Istanbul.
The Basketball Africa League is back. Voice of America joins forces with Africa's premier men's basketball league to bring you the second season of the BAL. It is game on March 5th, 2022. 38 games, 12 teams leaving it all on the court in Senegal, Egypt and Rwanda to determine the 2022 season champion. Tune in to VOA 24/7, FMs and to our radio and TV affiliates for some action. Pre-game, play-by-play, post-game, daily highlights, delivered by our finest commentators. Basketball Africa League 2022 on Voice of America. May the best team win.
This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours a day at voanews.com. Until next time, I am Chinua Nwafor in Washington, wishing you a great weekend.
This is the Voice of America. America, Washington,